It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Monday the 26th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Comcast's proposed $45 billion merger with Time Warner Cable has raised concerns in Washington about the possibility of a cable monopoly. It's also raised a lot of lobbying power. Comcast is said to be putting together one of the biggest armies of lobbyists ever seen in the country's capital. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein takes a look.
There's a simple way you could describe Comcast's strategy. Have an unlimited budget, then exceed it. The Sunlight Foundation's Bill Allison says the nation's capital eats it up.
You know, Washington is the kind of girl that always falls for the dozen flowers sent three or four times a day.
By the looks of it, Comcast got all the floors on speed dial. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, the company spent nearly $20 million lobbying the federal government last year, putting it in the top 10, and it's on track to be there again this year. Former FCC Chief of Staff Blair Levin says this is less about influencing Congress than convincing regulators and Comcast competitors this is a done deal.
Because if you have the impression that this deal is going to go through and everybody is rearranging their lives, it's much harder for a government to act in a way that upsets those expectations.
Levin says there is something of a firewall. Regulators at the Department of Justice are historically immune to lobbying campaigns, regardless of size. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
After the eBay hacking attack this month that may have impacted up to 145 million users, several states are conducting investigations, and lots of users are doing the same when it comes to their passwords. So when was the last time you logged in? It's been a while for me, and even though these days it feels like we do a password protection refresher every few months, seems like a good time for another one. So let's hear from New York Times tech columnist Farhad Manju. Farhad's got two things for us to keep in mind. Thing one?
You should create a password that is difficult to guess but easy to remember. Come up with a phrase that you remember, sort of like, my dog likes to eat cats in April. Okay? So what you do is you take the first letter of the words in the phrase and then come up with a password.
All right, so that's thing one. Hit me with thing two.
So a number of sites nowadays have something called two-factor authentication. And that's a system where you use a password to log in, and then it asks you for something else. Usually it's some kind of code, and it's something that's generated on the fly. So that makes it, you know, much more difficult for anybody to get into your accounts.
Let me ask you this. Are we ever going to escape the password as a security tool?
I mean, we're seeing more and more technology that allows you to protect your devices with biometrics, with two-factor authentication, with various things that are kind of about you in addition to the password, which is something you have to remember. I think that we'll just have to think about passwords less and less, but I don't think they're going to go away entirely.
Farhad Manju of The New York Times. This month, we've seen a growth in the number of requests for Google to erase or at least demote search results for certain Europeans after a court required it. Our friend Jonathan Zittrain at Harvard says, though, that we're at the brink of a dangerous precedent. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Right to be forgotten. You say maybe not the best idea.
Well, it's not even clear how it's going to be effectuated right now, but I certainly credit the European Court of Justice for putting this back in the public eye, saying that a Spaniard for whom on a search on his name, newspaper clippings of his 1998 foreclosure, that should somehow be taken out of Google search results only for his name.
I get his request there. You have some debts, you pay them. A lot of people Google you when they have a first interaction with you. You know, people are Googling each other all the time now.
I think from the point of view of somebody who does see one blip on the record somehow representing that person's identity, I agree with you that that first magic page of results on Google in particular does more to define you than pretty much anything else.
Now, you've also talked about this short-lived feature where they allowed people to actually comment alongside news articles that mentioned their names.
Yes, that was a feature in Google News from around 2007, and they introduced a policy that said if you were quoted or mentioned, you would be entitled to add a comment or other statement that would appear alongside the snippet of the article that was the result in Google News. And that is a very interesting way of allowing the people featured to say a little bit more without having it be a complete free-for-all where everybody gets to say something.
How does this all have you thinking about the future of our online identities and how we can still benefit from the sort of aggregated truth that comes from using the web to research entities, people, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, it's a tough needle to thread. And the check on that power that we're tending to be relying on is it's only a machine. If we knew that Google was hand curating results, I think we'd be quite upset. The more curated that is, whether by machine or by human, the more I think it deserves some kind of scrutiny and possibly an ability to contextualize for people who are mentioned or implicated by those results.
Professor Jonathan Zittrain. Jonathan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for us today. I've got a blog post up on our website, by the way, about hacking at marketplacetech.org. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.